Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, supplement to episode 1 on Frederick Winslow Taylor's 1911 work, The Principles of Scientific Management. Visit www.talkingaboutorganizations.com for more information and to access a free copy of the book we will be discussing. My name is Dimitris, speaking to you from the currently sunny Birmingham in the United Kingdom. Before I get into the content, I'd like to say a few words about what these supplements are. In truth, they can be anything that will help enhance the value of you listening to the actual longer episode later. Supplements are short recordings by one of us or one of our many future guests designed to be listened to before the episode. They may be brief summaries of the reading, historical background, or any other information we think may be relevant but not critical to understanding the reading. As for the first episode, we will be discussing a text that is over 100 years old. I thought it fitting to use this first supplement to tell you a little bit about what it was like to live and work at the time Taylor was developing his principles of scientific management in the late 19th century. Life was considerably different back then. Average household had no internal plumbing, no phones, and no cars. Telegraph was used for long-range communications, and traffic congestion was a thing of science fiction, with only 8,000 cars in the entire country, and none west of the Mississippi. Also, as we know from photographic records, people had to go about their daily lives in black and white only. The United States was probably best known for the vast expansion of its industrial plant and output. At the heart of these huge increases was the mass production of goods by machines. In the century since such mechanization has begun, machines had replaced highly skilled craftspeople in one industry or another. By the 1870s, around the time when Taylor arrived to the workplace, machines were knitting stockings, stitching shirts and dresses, cutting and stitching leather for shoes, and producing nails by the millions. Mechanization not only reduced manufacturing costs, but lowered consumer costs too. In many ways, machine production in factories created a growing abundance of products at cheaper prices. Working on a machine in a factory meant subdividing production down into many small, repetitive tasks, with workers often doing only a single task all day long, over and over again. While a great amount of unskilled labor was sufficient to operate vast majority of equipment, this is not to say that all the employees were completely interchangeable as the cogs in the proverbial machine. There were still a few highly skilled engineers roaming the floors of these industrial beasts. And beasts they were. On the outside, hundreds of industrial chimneys would exhume thick, unfiltered smoke, and on the inside, factory equipment would make the workspace crowded, hot, and very smelly. The pace of work usually became increasingly faster, and purpose-built factories designed to house manufacturing equipment were being erected in bulk. Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times is an excellent satire of these precise conditions. Check it out if you haven't seen it yet. As factories grew, the demand for cheap labor grew with them. Though pay varied by gender and age, typical employee made about $6 a week. This is comparable to about $150 a week today. In order to save money further, many factory owners hired women and children because they would do work for less. Most female workers performed unskilled or semi-skilled machine work, but some did work in industries that demanded heavy labor. Some women, for instance, worked on the railroads. Finally, factory managers began to enforce an industrial discipline, imposing set and often very long hours in less than adequate conditions. As a result, in the 19th century, more industrial accidents occurred in the United States than in any other industrial country in the world. But conditions did begin to improve somewhat in the run-up to the 1920s. One result of mechanization and factory production was the growing attractiveness of labor organization. To be sure, craft guilds had been around for quite a while, but now there were increasing reasons for workers to join labor unions. While such labor unions were not notably successful in terms of membership numbers, they were still able to organize a variety of strikes and other work stoppages. You will note that this was a life issue for Taylor, as he repeatedly mentions that scientific management is really good at making unions and workplace violence obsolete. In these early days of industrialization, there was little in the way of keeping business owners in check by means of centralized legislation and regulation. Large factory owners who employed tens of thousands of people were de facto rulers over entire communities. To many of their employees, especially those who were immigrants with very limited knowledge of American culture and English language, they were the only rulers that mattered. Factory work was organized along the craft system, where the knowledge and ability to perform a trade was acquired through direct apprenticeship. As such, there was little in the way of continued professional development we are so used to today. In fact, there was not much in the way of professions altogether. Yes, there were specialists here and there, but by and large the organizational structure was really flat, with a huge mass of labor doing the labor, a number of foremen who managed production, and a handful of engineers who fiddled with equipment on the side. In terms of management, all work was organized by the foreman on behalf of the factory owner. Foremen were responsible for hiring and firing, training, career advancement, and the enforcement of discipline. They would also set wages. At the time when Taylor was developing his scientific approach to management, the wage each individual employee would be offered was basically as little as the foreman thought they would do the job for. Amongst all this, there was growing recognition that production work could be done fairer, safer, and more efficiently. And mechanical engineers were the ones to lead the way. A person by the name of Henry Towne was one of the first engineers to recognize this. He thought that because factory owners relied on engineers to grow their production, the development of management techniques in particular was key to the development of the engineering profession as a whole. In the 1870s, he began applying systematic management at his firm, the Yale Lock Manufacturing Company, in the form of what he referred to as gain sharing. The gain sharing initiative was really simple. After subtracting some amount of interest from the profit, the remaining money would be divided amongst the employees more or less equally. You will find that some businesses still follow this model today. But much like today, gain sharing was not uniformly accepted by pioneers of management back then either. In 1891, Frederick Halsey dismissed gain sharing and proposed a minimum wage coupled with incentive pay based on recorded production outputs. Halsey based the minimum wage on the amount of time it took employees to do what they did before and supplemented that with a 1/3 share of any increases in production. While similar to gain sharing, this way employees could be sure of getting paid at least something regardless of how well they, as a collective, performed that week. Both systems were applied and both resulted in increases in employee remuneration and production volumes. However, because of lack of transparency, understanding of why some were better than others at working the same machines, and a loosely defined role of management beyond payroll responsibilities, tensions began to grow on both sides in respect to who gets paid for what and how much. It is at this time that the subject of our first episode, Frederick Winslow Taylor, arrives with a detailed and clear study of how work is to be measured and paid for, what is it that managers ought to be doing, and why everyone can be better off at no expense to anyone else. In The Principles of Scientific Management, Taylor picks up on many of the themes I have mentioned, including the extreme power asymmetry of the foreman, skilled and unskilled labor, and motivation and pay. I hope you enjoyed this very first supplement, and I look forward to bringing you the very first episode of the Talking About Organizations podcast on the scientific management of Frederick Winslow Taylor.